First of all, it started, the Baha'i Faith, you'll notice on page, beginning on page 321, the Baha'i Faith began in the early 1850s, 1850, we'll say. And if we get in more, that's not when the founder started it. The religion actually started after the founder was dead. But you can say that you had the founder dying for his new vision in 1850, and you can say that it happened in Iran, all right? The nation of Iran. Now, he died at the hands of some Arminians. Armenia is a nation. It is not necessarily the follower of a man by the name of Jacob Arminius. Those are two different things. But Armenia is a nation north of Iran. And strange thing is that it is somewhere between, if you can imagine, here's Armenia, and here is, down here is Iran. And here, on both sides of Armenia, is a nation known as Azerbaijan. You ever heard of that? Azerbaijan, okay? So Armenia and Azerbaijan are north of Iran, and of course Iran is where this religion began. We haven't studied Islam yet. That'll be chapter 16, but the Baha'i Faith came from a man who was very active in the religion of the Shia, Muslims, or you might call them Shiites if you heard them in the news before. But we'll get into how there are three or four different kinds of Muslims. And one of them is Shia, or Shiite. And out of that religion came this one. So when we take some time here in a couple days to update our grid, you'll see that the contributing religion, basically, of this religion is Islam. Okay? So, all right. So you might notice, first of all, well, it's not first of all, but on page 323, you might look at the third paragraph, fourth paragraph down, that the author of this book had the opportunity to visit the famous Nanagon, non-sided structure or temple in Wilmette, Illinois. Up on the board, you can see a picture of it. Wilmette, Illinois, Baha'i House of Worship. This is one of seven Baha'i houses of worship or Baha'i temples in the whole world. One of seven. And you might say that this is the capital in the United States for the Baha'i faith. There are about 150,000 Baha'i adherents in the United States. Now, you might think, well, how many is that, really? Well, in Fayetteville has a population of about 204,000 or 205,000. So if you were to take about 73% of that, that's how many adherents to the Baha'i faith in America there are, okay? Now, why this town in Illinois? Well, let's first of all keep reading about their fascination with the number 9. A nine-sided structure in Wilmette, Illinois, a building that utilizes the symbolic number 9, sacred to the Baha'is. Its architecture is a combination of synagogue, mosque, and cathedral. Surely you can see that by looking. It sort of looks like a cathedral, but there's no long body. Typically, cathedrals are shaped with what is known as a chancel and a nave, and those are all big church words, really. But you have a dome here, perhaps, and then a long body where people sit, and up here is the altar. That's sort of what a cathedral might look like. It might even have a higher ceiling so that people here can see what's up in here. But usually the architecture speaks to the majesty of God, and that is why you have what appears to be lots of wasted space in old churches. I mean, if you were to go across the parking lot here to Manna, you would see building, 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 and they all kind of look the same. I would guess, if I were driving up on the driveway for the first time, I would guess that the nice one was the church building, the brick, right? Well, that's not it. That's offices, that's daycare, that's classrooms. In the corner, that metal building is their church building. That's where they have their big auditorium. It has tiles like that. It has carpet like this. You pick up the chairs, you put down the chairs. It really doesn't look like a church building. And in America, one time we realized that architecture does really speak. It speaks loudly. Synagogues, of course, have a little bit different worship setting. And then, of course, your mosque. That's almost exactly what you would expect when you look at a mosque. Just a big dome where people meet. When we were in Morocco in June 2013, A group of us went. We went to the big mosque in, was it Casablanca or was it Rabat? I think it was Casablanca. We went to a huge mosque, one of the biggest ones apparently in Africa, and they lit a bunch of them. Well, who knew what we were? We were foreigners, and we were allowed to take a huge tour down through the belly of that mosque and marble everywhere. So this is meant to be a reflection of all of the world's major religions. That's what Baha'i was supposed to be. You'll see that in a minute. But when I say that to you, what religion that we've studied so far does that sound like? Theosophy, good, yeah. Buddhism was surprised that there was an organization that took all of the worship of the aforementioned religions and combined them. But what this tells us is that in their desire to be the religion that unites all religions, they actually became a religion. Because if you don't join the religion that joins all religions, that means you're different from the religion that wants to join all the religions, right? And so in wanting to be a religion that has all the religions, you become a separate religion. It's a lot like saying, I go to a non-denominational church. Okay, but just understand that you just gave it a label, which means it is a separate type of church now. So in our desire to not use labels, we label. All right, so the worship service, mid-paragraph. Well, actually, you might notice its architecture is a combination. We already talked about that. There are 9 concrete piers, 9 pillars representing the 9 living world religions, 9 arches. The building is beautifully centered in a park having 9 sides, 9 avenues, 9 gateways, and containing 9 fountains. Now, it makes me want to tour the place if I'm ever going through Wilmette, wherever that is. The worship service consists of readings from the Baha'u'llah, we'll talk about that in a minute, the Abdul Baha, and whatever sources from the major religions are thought to be meaningful. By the way, where's the Theosophy headquarters? So, the Theosophical Society, Illinois. The Baha'i Faith, Illinois. Interesting. Weird. All right, so there's a lot of strange things happening in Illinois. Now, let's look down at their calendar. The Baha'i Faith utilizes the calendar for observances designed by the Bab. That is not pronounced the Bab. That is pronounced the Bab. All right? And what does it mean? It means the gateway. We'll look at who that is in just a moment. But he, the man who died for the Baha'i faith in the 1850, he became, all right, the man who designed their calendar. Let's talk about this calendar. 19 months, each with 19 days. And talks to you about how do they do with the odd numbers. It gets into that detail there. But in any case, I wanted you to see this. Now, they are headquartered, as you can see from that same page, one paragraph up or two paragraphs up. Where are they headquartered, the Baha'i Faith, the world headquarters? Austin Harris, give me the answer. Anyone else? It's in the book.
Israel.
Where is it located? Haifa, Israel, that's right. Good. All right, so we have the headquarters in Haifa, Israel. Now, you look down at the bottom of the page, and you'll notice that the Universal House of Justice in Haifa has how many members on it? 9. So they seem to have this obsession with the number 9. So on the sermon audio recording that this will become, I'll put the link to the video we're looking at right now, and we'll look at the rest of it. All right, so this happened in early 1850s, their video says it was spurred on by an expectation of what? This religion that talks about how they provided the promised Messiah, right? The God who cannot be seen was manifest in a succession of great prophets that include, we're told, especially on the bottom of page 321, we're told that it is a succession of Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, top of page 322. We even add Zoroaster, Buddha, Confucius, Krishna, Lao, and the Baha'u'llah, the last great manifestation of the divine being. So can you see God? The answer is no. But how could you see God when he wanted to reveal himself? Moses, right, his prophets. The Baha'u'llah being the greatest disciple in 1852, who was captured, tortured, put in a subterranean prison, and he was the greatest disciple of what figure? The Bab. That's right. Which means what?
The gate.
The gate. Good. And Baha'u'llah changed his name, and let's see here. I have it down here in the book, Dictionary of American Religious Biography, second edition. Thank you. Abdul Baha, let's see, the name I'm looking for here is, it escapes me. But the man changed his name humbly to the glory of God. Isn't that something? I am the glory of God. And so he felt like he was the fulfillment of the promise that this Bab had of a last days Messiah. Wow. Now look, folks, we have crossed half the world in the same mid-century as the Adventist expectation had produced in America, in New England. Think about that. That's really something. When you realize that probably you can thank the Second Great Awakening for the birth of a quasi-Muslim religion in Iran, that's really significant. Think about that. It took a few decades for the influence, probably, of Western expectation of a coming Messiah. What did that start? It started Jehovah's Witnesses. It started the idea of a metaphysical second coming through what religion started in Boston? Christian Science. It started Mormonism, Adventistism, which we'll get into eventually. I mean, everything, think about this now, comes through the emotional, that Pastor Dave talked about in here, emotional thing known as the Second Great Awakening in America, in New England. That is really key. So you have this guy known as the Bab. He's the gate. And he has a vision. He's a Shia Muslim. And he has this idea that God doesn't have one great prophet. He's had a line of great prophets. And furthermore, he goes on to say that his information is actually one up on Muhammad. So why would that aggravate Muslims, do you suppose? Yeah, he said that basically, there it is, top of page 321, you have his name, Mirza Ali Muhammad, was the founder. He was known as the Bab, and he promised that a Messiah would come, and here comes the Baha'u'llah, and he is the fulfillment. Very nice indeed. And so the top of page 322, you see that he was standing before 750 riflemen, and they tried to kill the Bab. Well, they were unsuccessful the first time through. 750 riflemen missed the Bab and merely severed the ropes. And when the smoke cleared, they went back and found the Bab in his jail cell, finishing a discipleship session with some of his disciples. That's top of page 322. And eventually, he said, well, you can now take me, and I'm now ready to be a martyr for the God. And out they go, and they actually were successful the second time through killing him. Interesting. Then we see his successor down 6 paragraphs. Mirza Hussein Ali, better known to the initiated as the Glory of God. Baha'u'llah. He succeeded the messianic throne of Baha'ism upon the death of his unfortunate predecessor, the Bab. And then you see that he migrated to Baghdad in 1863. Questions so far? None? Okay. We already talked about that. All right. What was something you heard on the video about Baha'ism that it elevates a certain group of people that you probably wouldn't expect to be elevated in an Islamic civilization? Women. Good. Good job, Henry. So right away you know that this guy in the mid-1800s, the Bab, is not going to be popular in an Islamic state known as Persia. I mean, when you start shaking up the social order of things, just like we talked about in our lecture on the early church, all of a sudden you have less order. And it sounds like you're empowering women to buck the system and not submit to their husbands. Of course, that would be a problem for a society that's based upon the man being basically the small god in his house. What do we see a problem with when we start talking about Jesus being the truth in the middle of a long line of prophets who are the glory of God, who are people who share the glory of God? Do we have a problem with that? Does anyone see an issue with that? Okay, why do you think that's a problem to bring Jesus down on the same level? Scripturally speaking, let's work through this a little bit. You've heard Pastor Sean, talk about the argument C.S. Lewis provides in Mere Christianity. Jesus is one of three things. He is either the Lord, or he's a liar, or he's a lunatic. That is to say, either he's trying to deceive people, a liar, or he himself is deceived, a lunatic, or he is the Lord. But you cannot say that Jesus is the prophet of God if he's lying. Does that make sense? So what are some things that Jesus says about himself that argue against the tenets of Baha'ism? Say it again, please.
There's no other God.
Go ahead.
I'm the way, the truth, and the life.
There's no other God before me. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Jesus himself didn't say, there have no other gods before me, but he did refer to his Father as God, the God. So when you have a Lord or a good prophet saying things like, I'm the only way to the Father, it sounds like Muhammad is disqualified. It sounds like the Bab is disqualified. It sounds like Confucius is disqualified and all the other folks listed on top of page 322, Buddha, and so forth. Sounds like it, doesn't it? Now, let's talk also about some of the comparisons between the revelation of Baha'u'llah in the basement of this dungeon in Tehran. Remember, that's where he found his visions, right? Isn't that kind of strange? You're going to find out that that's typically how this thing works. Where was the Buddha when he got his vision? Under a tree. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So let's go through the religions we've discussed in here this year. Jehovah's Witness, all right? Christian Science, Mormonism, then chapter 7 of Spiritism, then what? Theosophy, and what was chapter 8? Christian Science was chapter 5. We had Buddhism, chapter 9, huh? Theosophical Spiritism. Yeah, okay, so Theosophical. All right, so you have these two people, particularly at this point, the Buddha, Eastern religion, right? He found visions of God under a tree. All right? You're going to learn from Islam that the Prophet Muhammad got his visions in a cave. So you have these men, God knows what they're smoking, and they're having visions. I mean, you're three stories deep into a dark dungeon, and you're hearing from God. Well, there's not much else to do. So I'm not surprised. But you have the Buddha, leaves his family, and sits under a tree until he feels enlightenment, the first Zen Buddhist, by definition. So anyway, I just wanted you to see that there are several patterns in the world of false religion. Several. All right. Check on learning. What is the major contributing religion of the Baha'i faith? Yeah, Islam. What type in particular? The Shia, right. Good. Shia or Shiite. Yep, either one. What spurred the Bab's emphasis on messianic fulfillment in 1850? What spurred that emphasis? We already talked about it. Well, he was executed, but that didn't really spur his emphasizing a messianic fulfillment. He was promising messianic fulfillment. Yeah, it seems like the Second Great Awakening was the greatest contributor to the worldwide, now, think about it, a worldwide expectation of a Messiah. We're going to talk about, when we get to Adventistism, the 1843 event known as the Great Disappointment, where they actually had a date on the calendar for the return of Christ. So when Christ doesn't return in 1843 and all the date setters are wrong, well, then what do we do next? Well, we start talking about being a spiritual fulfillment, right? Because you can't keep being disappointed. That's a disappointment. Yes?
Just before I say anything else, Jesus prophesied his death, right?
So, sure, he prophesied his death, yeah.
So if Bob
came... The Bob, get it right.
The Bob, I mean...
Who, by the way, calls himself the door or the gate. Isn't that interesting? Okay, go ahead.
Like, if he prophesied his death, would that make a more firm basis for the belief?
Well, I don't know. If he just prophesized what type of death he would have, maybe.
And when he would have it?
Maybe. Okay. I mean, let's. Someone could theoretically accuse Jesus of being suicidal. Because he said things like, I lay my own life down, I bring it back. That sounds like a guy who's saying, I could kill myself if I wanted to. Well, I mean, if you want to get real technical, any one of us could pick the mode and the date of our death. I mean, as long as we can make it to that date and be thorough. Here's what we know about suicide, since I have a ton of education on suicide, since I'm a chaplain in the Army Reserve, and they make us study that like you eat. Women try suicide more, but men are far more successful because they use a more lethal means, always. Women usually try overdose with pills, and men usually try to take care of it with a gun or something to that effect. So when we talk about Jesus being more vindicated as a prophet because he predicted his own death, yes and no. Yes and no. Probably more significant is the fact he predicted his resurrection. Okay, not many people can do that.
But and he didn't do... Like, he didn't hang himself on the cross.
He didn't. But some would say, like if you were a friend of Judas Iscariot, you could say, here you had a way out. You knew how the Romans were going to kill you. You're a treasoner by Roman definition. You said that you're a king in the middle of a Roman kingdom. So someone could theoretically say that Christ knew how he would die if he didn't take deliverance. And what was Judas trying to do? Well, a lot of people think Judas was trying to push Jesus to where he would just... kill everyone, start a revolution, and that's why Judas betrayed him. He wasn't really expecting Jesus to go with the arresters in the garden. He was expecting Jesus to do what Jesus actually did, which is speak and everyone falls over. And Judas was probably greatly disappointed when Jesus did not do. Judas was not trying to get rich. Judas was already rich. He was the one who held the money. Probably, like we talked about, if Philip can say when they're about to feed 5,000 people, we have 2/3 of a year's wage in this bag, and it's not enough to feed everybody. Well, if the average household income in Fayetteville is $54,000, that means that probably, by today's standard, Judas had in his hand, at any given time, between $30,000 and $40,000. He didn't need 30 pieces of silver. There was a reason why he was trying to quickly... get Jesus in an arresting, a situation where he had to defend himself. So how do you do it? You make sure someone is interested in him. So how do you make sure a transaction is made? Make the price real low. Just so happens 30 pieces of silver is the price of a slave. So Judas betrays Jesus for the price of a slave to get him to topple the Roman Empire. He doesn't. So a person sitting back and looking at that could say that Jesus knew he would be crucified, didn't deliver himself out of it, didn't take the opportunity to deliver himself out of that, and so he virtually committed suicide. But, of course, we know that's not true. Jesus died to be a ransom for sinners and be raised from the dead and to be restored to his Father's right hand. Yes?
What about the Romans, the soldiers, telling him that if you're Jesus, if you're really God, why don't you just call the angels to save you?
Well, that's not really what they said. And the Jews said, if you're the Christ, come down from the cross. And Jesus said, if I wanted to, I could call on my Father and have 12 legions of angels. So that's not really the issue. The issue is Christ who he said he is? And if he is, then the Bob can't be in a long line of prophets that are a manifestation of God. Because the Bob, who's calling himself the gate, and Jesus, who calls himself the way, don't teach the same thing. All right? And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Any other questions? Yes?
Do you believe that hell is right behind the cross?
That's, I think, a little bit outside the scope of our class. Any other questions having to do with today's subject matter? All right.